How's it going, everybody? This is your host again, Chewy here, welcoming you to the next installment of your podcast, Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. And Monica and I are excited today because we have a guest speaker in the house. We'll introduce him in a minute here, but before we do that, I wanted to ask Monica how her week went. How's it going, Monica?
It's good. I'm doing good. I sent you a snap. Well, I put it on Snapchat, and you saw the creepy crows that were in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Attacking the neighbor's house. I got up to put the trash can outside, and I heard a bunch of crows like before I stepped out, and I was like, why are there crows in the middle of the day? And there was 20. It was a bunch of crows, and they went from like the street, and then they all went to just one house, which was really trippy because I'm like, why that house? Like, what's up with that? Like, it was a trip.
I think your neighbor was performing satanic rituals. That's the only reasonable explanation. And it's funny that you saw that because the movie that we're talking about deals with murders. And you know what a group of crows is called?
No.
It's called a murder of crows.
What?
Mind blown, I know. I can see it. Oh, because by the way, we're trying something new here. You guys won't get to see it, sadly. Sad face. but since we have a guest speaker, we decided to do a video conferencing. And so I can finally see my friend talking to me.
Everyone, it's super cool.
The first time in forever. And we have our guest speaker. Once again, before we do that, let me just go ahead and remind our audience of our social media accounts here. We have our Facebook, which is titled Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. We have our Instagram, which is Myths Behind LGDS. And Monica has our Twitter and email information.
Yeah, so our Twitter is Myths Behind LGDS, just like the Instagram. And our Gmail is mythsbehindlegends@gmail.com.
Awesome. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring in our guest, our first ever guest commentator in our show. And I'm awfully excited for this because he's been a long friend of mine forever. How long have we been friends, by the way, Mark? How's it going?
I'm excited to be here. Yeah, man, we've been friends well over a decade. probably, yeah, you know, I think this is one of my longest adult friendships is probably with you, you know, like right out of high school, dude. I met you
because I'm a little older than you are, but
yeah,
when I met you, like, you were like a freshman in college, right? I think I was like a junior already or a senior maybe.
Yeah, man, I was like 18.
I was like 20-21 maybe. And it's funny because we met and we started jamming, like, we started, like, because we're both musicians and we both kind of like developed a friendship based on that. We were in a band that shall remain nameless because that's a dark chapter in our lives. Thank God for the music that we recorded tonight. Like, the internet was kind of like rudimentary back then, so like that music and all that social media stuff that we had for that band like disappeared.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah, that would be a little bit embarrassing for that to come to light. If you guys see it, don't share it. Delete. Burn.
Evidence, guys.
It was cringy, but, you know, I mean, it was a weird situation because, you know, luckily me and Chewy formed a good friendship out of that, but it was an already existing project that neither of us had really offered that much as far as the actual music went. So it was a weird situation where the band deteriorated because me and Chewy got along so well that the writing took a different turn and the drummer loved it and the singer did not.
Oh.
And so that's fun though, man.
It was his band that he kind of like, I remember, like, we're not gonna name him because he might be listening, but I mean, he knows, but you know, if he is listening, he knows who he is. But the reason why I brought him is one, that, you know, he's been a good friend of mine for I want to say 15 years, bro, because I'm 36 now. And when we met, I was
about
like,
right,
that was like 2021, so yeah, we're quinceañeras, you know, like. So yeah, dude, definitely, it's been awesome. Thank you. So, Monica, you always get the honors of telling us which film we're discussing. So, if you would do us a favor again, please.
Of course. So, this week we watched Mr. Brooks. And the movie begins with Mr. Brooks praying, and a separate voice is telling him he basically needs to give in to his desires. The first scene that we see is in an awards dinner, and the person presenting him is saying a bunch of good things about him, like talking him up. And then later we find out that he's a successful man, right? He's rich. He has this like really big company. And he does like seem like a little like shy, like reserved. But he has a really good personality.
So, Mr. Brooks, it's kind of an interesting choice for us to do here. I love this movie personally. Like, I it's one of my favorite movies that, you know, my friend Mark introduced me to this movie. Like, he thought of me when he saw it.
There's a lot.
Yeah, so the story is like, yeah, you know, he saw it and he's like, man, Chewie's got to see this movie. And I loved it because, you know, a psychology major and everything. And this movie, it's more of a psychological thriller than a horror movie. But, you know, since it deals with like murder and death, and to some extent I want to say mental illness too, or I don't know what you guys might have thought of that, and we'll get to that in a minute.
We'll talk about it later.
Mark, what were your thoughts when you first saw that movie? Like, just kind of a little brief, like, you know, when you first saw it, like, what was it that caught your attention about this film?
I liked that it would take me down roads where I was like, what the hell is this guy doing and why is he doing this, you know, because there was like deviance to the plot. I don't know how far you guys go into the movies if we have to say spoiler alert or anything like that. I mean, this movie came out in like 2007, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Every time that we do that, I kind of add like a little siren effect to the end. So by that, I mean, if they keep listening, that's on them. My conscience is clean.
All right, cool. Well, I mean, you know, that there were certain things that he would do. It was really interesting because he had a name for his inner voice, you know. What was it? I forgot the name already. It was like
Marshall.
Yeah, man. And they never explain who he is and they never say anything. You know, he's just like the demon that he's battling in his head, you know. But what I like about psychological thrillers, you know, is that the fear they instill, you know, is real. Mm-hmm. in these specific terms, you know, because he's obsessed with killing, you know, he wants to stop, he knows he's a monster, but he gets off on it, mm-hmm. you know, and so it's this weird thing tying into shame and murder, and that is real, you know, those are real things that we've seen, you know, in serial killer documentaries and stuff. And to me, that it's more interesting to see because it's very possible that this is happening or somebody's watching this and having the ideas or they're living vicariously through these movies. Uh-huh. And then they want to act out on it, you know? Whereas if you're watching like, you know, like a Freddy Krueger movie, you might have a bad dream, right? But you know that that's not likely to happen. Whereas you know, random murders are exactly that. Yeah. It's like spontaneous combustion. It's terrifying because you don't know if it can happen to you, you know?
Yeah, there's a statistic that I read. I mean, I forgot the exact number, but I don't know if it's true or not. But statistically, like, every person, you know, in the U.S., you come across anywhere between 6 to 10 serial killers in your life, like, without knowing.
Wow.
Whoa.
So that's terrifying. I mean, that's something that...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's like your like best friend, whatever, Mark. But maybe somebody that you like happen to be in a coffee shop at the same time with, you know, or somebody that's shopping in Target with, like, and they get in line behind you or ahead of you or something like that, you know. So that's a very like you say, the tangible thing. Like, it's something that actually can happen. I mean, somebody can have this hidden personality, quote unquote, where they seem or appear normal, and then you know, something happens, something triggers in their mind, and then they go out and commit these horrible things, right? And I want to clarify, because you know, we kind of jumped into this kind of like, but I want to go back like a couple steps and just clarify for the audience here that you're not really a horror fan, are you, Mark?
No, I'm not. Dude, I grew up in the country. Like, and my parents had a convenience store. So, like, as a child, I had been robbed at gunpoint. multiple times.
Uh-huh.
And there was always the fear of rattlesnakes, you know? And there was even, like bobcats out there and stuff, you know? So, like, the fear was in being attacked by an animal or a person because, like, the county took an hour to come. They're like, well, you know what? These people said there was guns. Let's wait this out. Let's show up, you know, and see if they're okay in a little while. And so that type of fear leaves no desire for scaring myself on purpose, you know? It was always like an anxiety as a child of just like these little things that just stayed with me, you know? And so I've always liked comedies. And so, you know, I know this is a deviation from what you guys normally talk about, which is more straight up horror, uh-huh. right? It's one of those things that will probably bother people the way sci-fi people don't like how fantasy sometimes gets tied into it, you know, because it's like a dragon isn't sci-fi. It's like, yeah, man, but it's cool. It's cool when it, you know, it's like a psychological thriller will scare you. It's a different fear. You don't jump. It's not a sudden thing, but it stays with you and you think about it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing worse than someone planting a seed in your head, you know, because you scare yourself worse than anybody, know? I mean, yeah, all of a sudden you're way more polite at the grocery store, you know what I mean? You're making sure you're not going to cut anyone off, you know, because you never know. And then we live in Texas, man. Everybody has a gun. Somebody could just, like, you know, most people are responsible with it, but hey, man, you know, I mean, we're pretty loose with the laws, you know, and I don't mean that in any political way or anything. It's just, it is what it is, you know?
It's Texas, you know, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, people tend to carry here, and that's, you know, a Texas thing. So, yeah, like, you start questioning yourself about, like, well, like, I mean, like, what is that person like, you know? Because some people, like, they kind of trigger, like a feeling, I guess. You know, when you see them, like, oh, that person looks weird, or that person looks a little bit off. Yeah. And sometimes it's like that, like, it's kind of that easy to tell, but a lot of times it probably isn't, you know? Like, it's just... Like I said, you know, the person behind you at the shopping center can have like 20 bodies in their basement or whatever, you know. So
he can be a Dexter. You never know, or a she.
Yeah, a she Dexter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I you know what I found really interesting is that, like, he had a genuine fear that his child was like him.
Oh, yeah.
Like he was afraid that there was like a genetic. What is it, a predisposition?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the serial killer gene or whatever it was, man. And that fake out at the end, I forgot about it when I rewatched it, and I was like, I don't remember this. Oh my god! But it, that kind of fear, you know, it's the same thing. Like, we'll have, if there's alcoholism in your family or a history of cancer or something, you know, that's a real fear. And it's really interesting to see a guy that gets off on murder still have normal feelings and have
human things. Yeah.
And again, that's what to me makes it scary, because it's like, in every other way, this guy is really, he's got it together, you know. I mean, he's a business owner, he seems like he's a philanthropist or something. He's a man of the year, right?
Yeah,
man, I mean, he's really got everything going on, and then you find this out, which also definitely messes with my self-esteem, because it's like, man, this guy's got his time to run several businesses and murder, you know, and I'm really struggling to put in 30 minutes on guitar a day, you know.
Multitasking, you know, this guy is all over the place.
The work ethic that these serial killers have is amazing. Like, I do have to say that. There's definitely a lot that goes into it.
Monica, going back to the film a little bit here, since Mark brought up the daughter and Marshall and Mr. Brooks himself, I mean, you have some, like, little, like, fact sheets on each of these guys, right, on these characters?
I have little notes, yeah. So I have, okay, so the main ones that we have are obviously Mr. Brooks, and he, like we already stated, he's, like, he has a good, successful life, he has a stunning wife, he also has an evil best friend, alter ego, which is Marshall. And then he has a daughter that apparently is not very committed to school. He goes to AA to deal with his addiction of murdering people, and he's pro-life, because we find out later that, you know, this girl, his daughter's pregnant, and he tells her, don't get rid of the baby. Like, it would be nice to have a baby in the house, right? Mm-hmm. And then Mrs. Brooks, we don't really see a lot of her besides, like, you know, whenever they have, like, the little family scenes. And I put that she's bougie. seems to, like, see her daughter as a disappointment, but hides it well because, like, she's, when they're driving home from the awards show, she does mention, like, you know, I don't think she's going to stay in college, you know how she is, blah, blah, blah. So she kind of seems like she doesn't expect the most out of her daughter.
Yeah.
And then we have Mr. Smith, and we meet him later. And he's the one that has the evidence on Mr. Brooks, for murdering, like, the couple in the beginning of the movie. He's also an admirer of Mr. Brooks, apparently. He's a creepy photographer and a peeping Tom. He knows Mr. Brooks is the thumbprint killer, and he wants to ride along with him, and he wants him to, like, murder somebody, and he wants to see it. And he, like I wrote, he's an anxious wannabe killer. He's an asshole, and he's childish. And then we find out way later in the movie that he's a mechanical engineer. So I'm like, okay, I was not expecting that. and then we have the daughter, Jane Brooks. And she's like, I put wannabe college dropout because she's like kind of like contemplating it in the beginning. And then later we find out that she wants to work at her father's company so she doesn't have to continue going to college. She's a daddy's girl. And the scene where they're talking, or she's trying to convince them to let her work in his company, made me feel uncomfortable, dude, because like this chick is like, I want to say maybe like 18, 19 years old, right? And she's sitting on her dad's lap, like, and being like, daddy, please let me work with you. Like, what's going to happen if something happens to you? Like, who's going to take over the company? Wouldn't you want me to take over the company? And there was like a lot of sexual tension in that scene, and it was really weird. And I thought she was like really chiflada, like entitled, you know. And then we find out she's pregnant, which is why she dropped out of college. But there's, you know, also something else that we don't find out till the end. And then she's also a homewrecker, apparently. She was, like, messing around with a married man, and that's the father of the baby. And then we have the detective, Tracy Atwood. She has been following the thumbprint killer case, so she knows, like, everything about what he does. Like, his signature, which is, like, after he kills the people, he puts them, like, in positions where they're kind of, like, loving each other, or, like, it's, like, a romantic type of scene, and he takes pictures of it. And then she's going through a messy divorce, and she's a really good detective. Like, we find out that she knows, like, a lot of things that you wouldn't even think of. Oh, where's Marshall? I guess I missed him over here. Where is he?
We'll talk about Marshall in a minute, because I got stuff to say about him.
You brought him up briefly. You mentioned that he was his alter ego / best friend.
Yeah, so, like, he's kind of like the little devil on his shoulder, you know? He's, like, always telling them, like, oh, you need to kill... And he's like Mr. Brooks' right-hand man, basically. And I feel like he's the one that retains all the stuff that Mr. Brooks sees, like little memory bank or whatever. He's kind of like Mr. Brooks' memory and also like evil sidekick. So that's basically what.
Yeah. He's a really interesting character because they chose not to use the same actor to play the alter ego. And so it had me wondering, you know, it's like, did this guy mess him up, you know, like as a child or something? Yeah. Did something happen? Is it like, or is that his first kill? Mm-hmm. Is that the guy who maybe sired him into killing, or, you know, like, it leaves these questions in my mind, you know, is it his dad, you know, like, who is it? Who's this character? Because it's an older character, you know, I mean, so. Like an uncle or a young dad or something. Right?
Something, yes. So
never find out, though, like, who he is or why it's that man. And I was waiting for that, too. I was like, okay, well, like, is he going to say, like, where he came from? Like, why he's the one that always shows up? Because I know it's a split personality type of thing. But, I mean, he had to get that dude from somewhere, you know? So that kept stayed in the back of my head, and then we never figured it out.
Yeah. So, just going over some of these scenes a little briefly, like, you know, we already discussed, like, his award ceremony, the driving home, his first kill, or the first kill that we see in the movie, at least.
Oh, yeah.
Where he stalks the couple, and he doesn't want to, And Marsh was like, come on, bro, let's go, come on, let's do it, come on, come on, like, you know, the peer pressure, man. And Mr. Brooks says he doesn't want to, he wants to stop, whatever, but he's like, okay, whatever, let's just do this, let's just look at him for a bit and see what happens, you know. And of course, you know, he's gonna kill him.
Yeah.
Because if you're already giving into that, I mean, yeah, you know, you already know he's gonna do it.
Yeah.
But man, his whole little operation that he's got, you know, he goes home at work, or you know, and he's like, says good night to his wife. He's like, well, I'm gonna go to the study that I have over there, like somewhere, and I'll be there for a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this guy, you know, he's prepared. He's ready. Like, you know, he's thought everything out. He has this little, I don't know. I mean, he calls it a study, I think.
It's like his studio. So he has his, like, his ceramics there, because I think that's what that furnace was. It was like the kiln where he bakes his, like, his ceramic stuff.
Yeah, but not only that. I mean, he's got a furnace, you know, to burn all his clothes and all his evidence, you know, the pictures, you know, because he takes pictures of his crime scenes. And then he has, like, all these extra suits and boots and, like, all, like, you know, all these, like, plastic bags in there. Yeah, to, like, he's got extra cars, you know.
Cars?
Like, yeah, because he has like the luxury car where he's driving his wife to the from the award show, and then in that study or that studio, whatever, he's got like a cheap old car that, you know, with like probably stolen plates or something, or fake plates, whatever, that he drives around to like scout over his victims, you know. So the scene where he gets to the place, whatever, and Marshall's talking to him, and he kind of like looking around and you know, making sure that people are busy, quote unquote. Because I'm pretty sure he plans this out where he kills people when they're vulnerable, when they're either asleep or in this case having sex, you know, they really feel like focused on something completely different, you know, so they're not worried about somebody breaking into their home, apparently. But I thought it was a little like weird because he says hello or hi or something and he like surprises them.
I think it's because he wants to see the shock, like he gives them like a hi or something, like a rush. I think that's why he does it.
Yeah, I was gonna say that, like he waits for the reaction, you know, and they look, of course, like, terrified.
Yeah.
And so he waits for a couple seconds, and then he shoots, and then he does, like, a little twirl, like, like...
Yeah.
He, like, he's getting high, like you say, you know, like he just shot up heroin or something, like, he, like, inhales, yeah,
he gets off.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one of the things that makes it scary, is, like, that face he makes, it... How much he enjoys it in that moment, you know? He breathes in the air all deep, and man, dude, it's like he's taking a hit off of something, you know? It's insane. What a good actor.
I mean, that's one of the things that I liked about this movie. I mean, like, he plays the part, like, of the good person and the killer, you know?
Yeah.
And seamlessly, because he goes from one to the next like nothing, and we mentioned, I mean, he questions his motives, like, I want to stop and whatever, but I don't really think he wants to. Like, I mean, it's a complicated character because, like, he seems like he wants to, but then I don't think he does. And I think his daughter is a little more complex than we give her credit for also. But, you know, the scene or the movie goes on and everything, and we meet the detective, you know, Tracy, which I want to marry. I fall in love with somebody in every movie. Monica already knows this.
It's a habit that he has.
I mean, that's a good one to fall in love with.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about falling in love, but maybe because, you know, she likes younger people and she, like, pays for their stuff. I gotta find me one of those.
He's like a sheriff, dude. Yeah.
I gotta find me one of those. One of these, like, you know, a really hot-looking, like, woman, like, powerful woman like her, and just pay for everything. And you go work, honey, and I'll stay at home and take care of the dogs, whatever.
Don't worry. Dinner will be ready.
Yeah.
You got her, cook. You got her.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'll be like, dessert's always ready. So we get to know her, and some of the details that you first see about her, like at the very end, they all kind of tie together because Mr. Brooks is a really smart person.
Yeah.
And he ties everything, like you're okay, like you think, I'm seeing the detective, you know, like why do I care about her life or details or divorce, whatever, you know, it all ties down, you know, a little better towards the end. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk, you know, a couple other scenes here. The scene where the daughter comes home, everything starts kind of like falling on him, as far as, one, his daughter's home from college and kind of unexpectedly. I mean, his wife kind of already did, So she's waiting for him, and he's giving like a business trip to some like foreign investors or something.
So he
has to leave that meeting or whatever, and he goes to the office, and his daughter's there, and then Mr. Smith is there too,
yeah,
with the pictures, and he's kind of like anxious looking, and so he goes in and meets with his daughter. Monica already mentioned that gave her like creeps.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting interpretation of that scene. I didn't see that. Like I didn't think about it that way, to be honest.
Me either.
I thought about the daughter being manipulative and being like you know, super like mind game type of person, and that's what I meant when I said that I don't think we gave her enough credit. Like I think this girl knows exactly how to play her dad.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Even the mom like talks about how like, oh, you always think the best of her. You always defend her, and you always basically give her what she wants. So she knows she always goes to dad, you know, for everything. So yeah.
I have a question.
Sure.
Do you think that she knew about his little side thing, about his killing? Do you think maybe she caught something as a kid? Because she didn't say anything when there was a second hatchet job.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think too. Like, I was like, because, I mean, typically when people become serial killers, it's because there's like a whole thing about it. They're not necessarily born as serial killers, but they become it, like, because of either their childhood. There's like different elements that you have to have that end up leading you to that. So maybe, like, let's say that she is like her dad, like you said, maybe she did see something or caught him in some way, and that kind of like stayed in her head, and then it started growing, and then that's why she ended up like killing that other person. And then when her dad was like, oh, just FYI, you know, there was another murder, but you were here, right? So it wasn't you. And she just kind of looked like, oh, right, that's true. Like, oh, I guess, like, I don't know about it anymore.
If ever you're going to catch on, right?
Yeah. Like, I was like, she has to know. She has to know that her dad covered for her, for sure.
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I hadn't even thought about it, to be honest. Like, that never, like, you know, crossed my mind before this episode. But yeah. I want to say, like you know, like I was talking about, I think she knows just how to play him. Like, she knows how to manipulate him. She knows him better than he thinks, or that he would like for her to know him, you know? Like, so I guess on some level she does know. I think she does know that he's up to something, that something, you know, is a little off with him. She knows that he's going to protect her no matter what.
Yeah.
So assuming that she doesn't know anything about him being an actual killer, like, she might on some level think, well, he's gonna hire somebody to do it for me or for him, at the very least, you know, at the very least, yeah, because of the money, the power and everything, you know. So because she seems to be very financially motivated, that's one of the things that she mentions, like, oh, like, you know, I want to take over the business if you're not here, whatever. So I think that's in the back of her mind, as far as, okay, I know I want to take care of the money, the business, whatever. So on some level, like I said, I think she knows that he's gonna find a way to cover for her, as far as either getting somebody to do it for him, or maybe doing it himself. But I don't think, I had never thought, like I said, that she knew that he was an actual killer. But I would give her that she probably did know that he would find a way to do it for her.
Yeah, you know what? All like threw me off throughout the whole thing. His wife never noticed anything, nothing. And then I started thinking, like, maybe it's because I hadn't seen this movie in a long time. Like, I think I saw it when I was like a teenager or something. So the whole time I was waiting, like, I'm like, okay, maybe at some point the wife finds out and she like supports him or something. Because, like, if he's rich, it'd be stupid for her to be like, oh, bye. You know, like, obviously he's not gonna kill her. But, like, the whole time, he was just like, oh, I'm going to go to my studio. Oh, okay, babe, I'll be here, you know, when you come back. And then she never asked where he goes, like, he's missing for, like,
you know,
and I'm like, aren't you worried that your husband may, like, I would have at least thought maybe she thinks he's having an affair. Nothing. It's like, it's just, where is your husband, dude?
That's exactly what she, in her mind, knew. And so she's like, well, you know what? He takes care of me. I have all this.
Yeah.
He treats me well. And and it's never brought to into light. Mm-hmm. So I'm just gonna let him have it. I honestly think that that's what it was.
Yeah.
So she was choosing to turn a blind eye to all these gaps of time, thinking he's got to go out there and he's got to cheat,
uh-huh.
you know. And you find, I think you probably want to find somebody that would just turn a blind eye to things so that you can take advantage of the situation, build and establish your character, you know, who you're pretending to be, and then you go out and you do your thing, and people, if you disappear at all hours of the night, people are going to think the same thing. Oh, well, he's a rich guy. He's out there. He's you know, he's doing his thing. Yeah. He's doing the thing that a lot of very rich and powerful men do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think on some level she was aware that he was up to something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she was smart enough or naive enough, depending on how you look at things.
Yeah.
To not do anything about it, you know?
It's hard to look a gift horse in the mouth, man. I mean, that their house was beautiful.
Dude, I know. Yeah. I was going to say that house was, like, nice. She was probably like, yeah, I'm going to do whatever he wants. He buys me whatever I want, and we got this awesome house. Who cares?
And she doesn't she doesn't clean it. Someone else cleans it, you know?
Like I said, she's bougie.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That's a good deal.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, so you mentioned you had a point or a question about the daughter, like about her manipulating her dad. Like, I mean, what was in your mind?
My original thought was maybe she had witnessed something as a child to give her an inclination that he might be a killer or that he's a dangerous man. But, you know, when you were mentioning, like, she kind of has a lust for money, you know, and she's interested in that stuff. Power seems to be something that she wants, and manipulation, you know, has to do with that. If you can manipulate someone, then you have power over them. So what if she ends up being a serial killer, but it's through apathy and just not having the emotional capacity that, like, would give you the ability to have empathy? Because if you grow up with a serial killer for a father, there's faults in terms of, like, how love is given or received, you know? He doesn't know how to... He's pretending to be a human, you know?
Yeah.
You copy, you mimic, you know? And so how do you do that with something you've never experienced?
When it comes to that, I mean, like, I you know, like I mentioned, you know, his daughter is definitely a manipulative woman. Even for her young age, I mean, she knows how to work people. Like, and she works him, like, perfectly. Like, she knows how to make him do whatever she wants, basically. I mean, yeah, he's got this side thing going on, but at the same time, he does love his daughter. He loves his wife.
Yeah.
You know, and that is genuine, because he makes that very clear, you know. And there's a scene later on that we're going to talk about in a minute. But he makes that very clear. You know, he does worry and he loves him. You know, he cares about him. So how do we tie the detective here? Because I feel like we've left my wife out of the picture for a long time here.
She's the other object in his eye, because she's brought up because she goes to Dane Cook's character's house.
Uh-huh.
Or his apartment, right? And she leaves a card, and he gives her the card. And so that's the first time that it's brought to his attention that somebody would be investigating these killings, right? I mean, even though he clearly leaves a calling card, you know?
Yeah.
He's the thumbprint killer. Marshall makes that snarky little remark, you know, he's like, oh, I didn't know there was someone looking for us, you know. And
well, you're a serial killer. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and so now he can put a face and a name to the person that's been investigating him, uh-huh. you know. And so now he becomes obsessed with her. And so I guess we can tie into it through there, because that's the other part of the film. No, those were the parts that were confusing me as I watched it, uh-huh. you know, because it's like, what's going on here? He just like had a sudden obsession with her.
Well, I think he admired her too because of her background. Like, she's this rich person just like him, but she decided to become a cop. So she's like, he's like, why? And that's like the question that's in the back of his head through the entire movie, which is why he asks her at the end, like, why, if you have all this this money, did you decide to be a cop? You know, like, why? Like, what's in it for you? So that's one thing that I think he's like very intrigued
by. He wanted the daughter to be like that.
Chick, like, really independent. She does her own thing. She has her own thing. And his daughter's like all over the place. Like, doesn't even, she wants to take over the family business, I think, because she doesn't want to have to work for anything herself. She just wants somebody to hand it to her, as opposed to the detective that's done everything on her own. She's not relying on her family money. She's just doing her own thing because she actually likes it. That's like her career. And she did all that by herself. Like, that's her life, you know? And he wants the same thing for her daughter, but she's not like her, you know? So that's why he's obsessed with her, like you said.
That's very interesting. I had never thought of him using my wife as a role model. So I mean, you know, like, you guys are bringing up really good points here, and I don't know what to say. But no, like, but essentially, like, yeah, I mean, that does make sense though, because he already knows when she comes home from college, you know, and she tells him like, oh, I college isn't really for me, whatever, it's not working out. And then the cops show up at his place and ask her questions, and after the questioning, he already knows, because she already told him one story. My friend's driving the car to my place, whatever, because I just wanted to leave, whatever. And then when the cops come over, she tells them, oh, my car was stolen.
Right? Yeah.
So her story wasn't matching what she had told him previously. And that's when he figures out, okay, my daughter is messed up, just like I am.
Yeah.
You know, and he was really, like, kind of, like, sad about it. Like, you know, you saw him, like, crying, you know. He was, like, talking to Marshall, and Marshall was like, oh, come on, man, you know, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And so he's like, really broken about the fact that his daughter is not okay, you know?
And it's also, like, I think he's... Because, like I said before, her mom seems very, like, doesn't expect too much from her. To me, she came off kind of like a disappointment to her. And now he's kind of, like, having to deal with that, too. Like, like, she's not what I thought she was going to be or what I wanted her to be. She's like me, you know? She's kind of, like, not... She's going to struggle, really, because if she doesn't get her, like, addiction in check or try to, like, be more careful like he is, then she'll end up in jail. So there's only things he can cover, too. Like, he can't cover for her whole life.
Because, one, like, Mr. Brooks is a very intellectual killer. Like, he thinks of everything. I mean, we already discussed about him having, like, the extra clothes and the shoes and the car and everything. He's got secret identities already, like, set up for himself as far as, you know, when I'll get to that in just a minute here.
But that was cool. I actually like that.
Dude, but I mean, he's got everything. Like, he's thought of everything. Like, I don't think there's any stone he's left unturned or any corner he hasn't, like, you know, already, like, put surveillance on, whatever, because, you know, you see him, like, and like, a challenge comes up, and he finds a way, like right away to deal with it, you know? His daughter is more visceral. Like, she committed a crime of passion, quote-unquote. I mean, if we believe what she said, that she's pregnant. I don't think she's pregnant, by the way. She tells him that, like, you know, like, when he's arguing with him and his wife, whatever, about her not being in college anymore, she just kind of throws that out, like, oh, I'm pregnant, you know, and that's why I left. Or whatever, and I don't think she is. I think that's just another little mind game she's playing with him, because she knows that's gonna get him to feel sorry for her and like, be more protective, you know?
We're talking about her having, like, morning sickness. She looked fine, dude. Like, she did not look like... And then not only that, but he was like, are you thinking about keeping the baby? If she's already having morning sickness, like, you only have, like, a short period of time before you can actually, like, you know, yeah. get rid of the baby. It's like, girl, like, either you make up your mind right now or you go and do it, because, like, you know, there's not that much time left. And if she were to keep that story going, then if she wasn't pregnant, then she would be discovered by her dad, because she'd been lying the whole time.
Yeah, so I mean, me, for the record, I don't think she was. Like, I think she was just,
yeah,
like,
either.
Playing him and his mom, or her mom, to a lesser level. So let's go back a little bit. You know, we kind of talked about the daughter already and her little mind games. So Mr. Smith, like we kind of left off with him. We're kind of jumping all over the movie here, but it's because it all makes sense at the end. Everything comes out, you know, or ties up in a nice little knot here for us at the very end. But Mr. Smith, you know, he takes pictures of Mr. Brooks, you know, when he commits that first murder in the movie, whatever. Any sensible person would have thought, I gotta call the cops on this guy. I gotta, like, do the right thing and you know, call the cops on him, because he's a murderer and he's doing these things. And yeah, I mean, that might expose you as a pervert, you know, but what does that tell us about him as a person, as a character? Like, next time you murder somebody, I want to be there. I want you to take me with you.
Yeah, he's a loser. He spends all his time watching this other couple. I understand the voyeuristic nature of that, mm-hmm, you know, yeah. And if it's on display, like, I understand somebody watching that, but rather than just staying in and watching that every night, maybe that should inspire you. Hey, you know what? They actually have a really nice apartment, you know, a lot nicer than mine. That dude's in really good shape, you know. I could put on some muscle. Why don't I start going to the gym? But he doesn't do that. He doesn't go out. He doesn't talk to girls. You know, he just has all this rage. He just has rage, uh-huh. dude. And I think he probably just needed to. For whatever reason in his mind, like, he didn't talk about that, right? But I don't know how, if we're jumping around in the film, you know, because we're talking about characters. When they go and they meet the lawyer and the ex, or soon-to-be ex-husband of your wife, afterwards, he's talking about, oh, her face, you know, and he was, like, so into that. I don't know if they purposely emphasized that or not, you know, but he seemed to have some kind of, like, aggression towards women, you know, and...
I would agree.
I don't know, dude. I think that's probably, like, something that might lead that kind of guy into killing, you know? He was already like a pervert. Like, he was taking pictures of this couple, mm-hmm. and stuff, and he was staying in every night. It basically took over his life, you know? He didn't have a lot going for him. And then he witnessed the murder. I think that never had he seen such power.
Yeah.
You know, like, this guy walked in while these two had the, like, in the most intimate position that you can be in, you know, and like the most vulnerable, dude.
Yeah.
The, like, your guard is down, you know, and all of a sudden you're filled with horror because there's this man with a Ziploc bag tied over a gun, dude. Like, that guy, he's not there to. No, I mean, he's there for some business,
yeah.
dude.
Yeah,
and then
he's gonna end you, know that.
Yeah, dude, and so I think just this guy who's never felt any type of power or dominance, I mean, because he's got a good job. Instead of working on himself, he's like, I'm just gonna kill people. Yeah. That looks like it made that guy feel really good.
Yeah.
You know? And that was him, dude. That was the character. Somehow it is a believable character to me, because this was, what, two, like 13 years ago,
yeah,
or something?
Give or take, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's way more believable now because there's shootings and there's just this disconnect from...
From reality, yeah.
And from emotion. Like, you're destroying people's lives because not only are you taking a life, but, like, you're wrecking that family emotionally, you know, you're gonna, their friends, everybody, and they don't think about that. They're just, I'm upset.
Yeah.
This is how I'm gonna deal with it. That's crazy. And you want to say, man, like, that doesn't exist. But again, that goes back to why I think this is way scarier than Freddy Krueger. You know,
there's a lot of serial killers that actually have a lot of like mommy issues or issues with women, and they end up like, I think, wasn't like that guy, the Wayne Gacy guy. There's a lot of serial killers that focus on murdering like prostitutes because they know that they're not gonna be looked for, because then nobody cares about like prostitutes, and it's because they have issues with women too. So like, this has been going on for like a long time. And that's what, like, you were talking about him, like, how he obviously has issues with power, probably with women. And I think also, like, the fact that he's able to inflict all the pain, not only to those people that he's murdering, but, like, it's a residual type of pain. I think that's what, like, kind of gave him his rush, you know, like, his, like...
Like, vicariously, I think is what they call it. Like, you know, like... You experience something through somebody else, like Mark was saying. I mean, he does seem like a character that's filled with a lot of frustration and rage about him not being where he would like to be, I guess, you know, as far as women or money wise or professionally, whatever. So in a way, I think, yeah, like he when he saw that murder, that's kind of like what made him realize, oh wow, you know, like there's a way for me to get out of here, or where I'm at as far as my situation, and. Man, you know, it just involves killing somebody. Okay, I can do that. Like, you know, just kind of like giving into your base impulses, and that's a lot more common now, because I don't mean to criticize social media. I mean, I use social media all the time, like, you know, but I do believe that's given people a license in their minds to do things they wouldn't do otherwise. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, in the virtual world, I mean, you can go on Facebook and talk to somebody and insult them and call them names, whatever. From the comfort of your home, knowing that you're not gonna get any repercussions for that, other than somebody calling you a name back on the internet, you know. I think some people are jumping that wall, in the sense that okay, you know, I can do this on Facebook. So I mean, and then little by little, they kind of start doing it in their own lives too, in real life.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a false sense of anonymity. You know, that maybe gets to these people, as far as, okay, you know, like, I mean, I'm frustrated because of this and this and this. So you kind of let these frustrations out online with strangers, you know, people that have no idea who you are. You have no idea who they are. When you're done, you're like, okay, let me just watch TV or something. Let me watch whatever, or play a game or whatever, because you're done with that. And then you kind of put that away in a little box for a minute. And you go back to it whenever you want to let go of some of that steam, you know, for some of these people. But I think that
pure hatred, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. So what does that say about people, about us? I mean, I don't mean us, like us three specifically, but I mean people, like I mean, is there that much frustration, anger, hatred, like Mark says? I mean, just hiding that now that we have Facebook, you know, Twitter, whatever, and we let this anger out in there, I think that might not be enough for some people still. I think some of these people still don't feel like it's... Or they got exposed to that, or, okay, you know, it's kind of like being addicted to a drug.
Yeah.
Where it kind of helps you for a bit, and you need more and more of it as time goes on. And I think a character like this, it's like a reflection of, like Mark says, people that we see now, where that's not doing it for them anymore. Now they want something more. They want to go out, and you know, this guy happens to witness a murder right in front of him, and he's like, oh wow, you know, that kind of like blew his mind. And like Mark said, you know, it looked like it made Mr. Brooks feel like really, really good. He's looking for that, like, he's like, you know what, I'm gonna latch onto this guy because he knows how to do this or how to get away from this position, and he's gonna show me, and you know, whatever. So,
and what a role model. I mean, he's got all that money. He's got businesses, you know. I mean,
man of the year, bro.
He was man of the year. Yeah, exactly.
What better role model? Like, and who would think, you know, like, who would think that? I mean, it's not impossible, of course, because all of us have secrets. We all have skeletons in our closet. But who would think that the man of the year is a mass murderer? Honestly, like, you know, so he definitely picked a hell of a role model.
Yeah, man, it's the perfect cover, because again, you know, it goes back to, if he's gone for all hours of the night, or if he doesn't have an alibi, he can be like, look, I was with a woman and I didn't get her name.
Yeah.
And they would just let it go. Yeah. They would let it go. They'd be like, okay, well, no, he was with somebody that wasn't his wife, and that's why he didn't have an alibi. I mean, obviously, this is a work of fiction, but he's the perfect character, you know, because the writing was strong enough for the movie to hold without people, like, being too, like, into it. You don't have to think about it. You can just watch the story, yeah. and it's great, but they leave enough space, like, enough vagueness to where we can dive into the characters and talk about why they would behave this way, because it is real human behavior. And if it wasn't for the writing being so strong, they wouldn't be able to have that openness to it. Yeah. And there, it's like music, you know, like sometimes there's a certain way they do things, or there's a certain timing of something that makes something feel very dramatic, or the use of dynamics. Like they did that with the characters. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Well, when I think of Mr. Smith, who was like that, you know, his, what do we want to call him? His prodigy? Well, not really, because this guy's like the sloppiest dude ever. Like, he's too emotional, honestly. So that's why he doesn't really, all he wants is to kill. He doesn't want to really learn about, like, all the little details that Mr. Brooks is trying to instill in him. But I just can't get out of my head how when he finally gets his chance to watch a murder that he's been waiting for forever, this guy, like, first moves, right? And makes a creak. So these people are already, like, on alert. And then, no, I think before that, right? He pees himself.
No, he moves, like, first. He moves first, and then he pees.
Yeah, as they're walking through the hallway, he tells Mr. Brooks, like, I really gotta go to the bathroom. And he's like, well, you're gonna have to hold it, because, you know, this isn't gonna take long. And he doesn't, you know, poop himself, but he pees himself. And Mr. Brooks just looks at him like, really?
Like, well, disappointed, yeah.
This is what you do? Like, come on, man. It was very telling of his character, too, because it's like, this guy doesn't know what it takes to be, like, what he wants to be, which is a serial killer, you know? Uh-huh. Like, it's a lot of work, and he doesn't really get it, you know? He just kind of wants the whole thrill of it, but he doesn't want to do the work so that he doesn't get caught.
I think he's not capable, because, we go back, you know, to the very beginning, or like, after he tries to blackmail him, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
Mr. Brooks breaks into his apartment. He's all asleep, like, oh, like, whatever, and he just, like, sits on the bed next to him, and he's like, oh, like, what's going on? Yeah, so... For that was one. I mean, like, if you're trying to blackmail somebody like that, like, or that powerful, I mean, you should probably be more aware of your surroundings, bro. Like, because somebody, like, I mean,
now your window's shut.
Yeah, like, even if you think you got him cornered, I mean, you know, he's capable of the murder, for one, like himself. And then somebody with his kind of resources can finally, like, or can probably find somebody that can do it for him, you know, if whatever. You know, so I would not be as relaxed as he is, for one.
Yeah.
You know, like, throughout the movie. And then the other scene that made me realize, you know, this guy is just, like, you know, he's not nowhere near the level of Mr. Brooks at all, is when they're stalking their first victim, you know, when they get cut off in traffic, whatever. They stalk somebody for a bit. And then it just so happens that a criminal that my wife put away for a while broke out of jail. And he's trying to find her and kidnap her and kill her, whatever. And when they're stalking the guy that cut him off in traffic, the criminal happens to stop at the same convenience store where this guy works, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Brooks immediately says, hey, whoa, I know this guy. And Marshall, I love the way they interact, bro. Like, the way that the interactions between Marshall and Mr. Brooks, I'm laughing. I always laugh at them because they seem to have a lot of fun together. Like, I mean, it's I don't know if that's weird or bad for me to say, you know, like, because, like,
no, there was moments where they laughed.
Yeah,
they laughed.
Yeah,
I mean, they laugh together. It looks like they're BFFs, you know, like they're in this, like, you know, ride or die kind of thing, you know. So they're stalking the guy, and then the criminal shows up with his girlfriend, whatever, and Mr. Brooks tells Marshall, hey, we know this guy, right? So they determine it's a criminal, whatever. And you have this moment where Mr. Brooks, like, has an idea, and Marshall just looks like, oh man, I love that you're, like, the way you think, whatever, like. But before all that, you know, when they're talking to the guy in the pickup, you know, Mr. Smith forgets the license plate, and Mr. Brooks proves the point, like, hey, you gotta remember this, like, you know. He's like, oh no, I got it. He's like, so what is it? And he's like, like drawing a blank, you know. So then he's like, no, write it down, whatever. So that's the what I forgot to mention there for a minute, but
yeah.
So then he, Mr. Brooks, by this point, where they get to the criminal, like, you know, the one that ran away, he's already got things figured out. He already knows this detective's after him. Like, she's already, or he's already been looking into her life. He knows who that guy is, you know, how he plays into her life. So that's why Marshall looks all happy and ecstatic, and oh man, you know, like I love how you think, whatever. And then we see that scene where he flies to kill somebody else in a different state, whatever, with his secret identity. And
note about how that whole outfit or his disguise, where he's wearing like the blonde wig and everything, uh-huh. I was like, he looks like a washed out like lead singer for a 90s rock band or something. Like, kind of almost looks like he could be like the Nickelback guy, but like if he's like really, really like wasted, you know, like that's kind of what he looks like.
He looks
like
really
to me.
Grungy. Yeah, he looks like you know, like
long. Does he even have like a ring on his ear?
I think so, yeah. I think he had a little earring, yeah.
I mean, his attention to detail was really good.
Impeccable, man. Yeah, for real.
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about. I mean, this guy thinks everything through. Like, he's thought everything through already. Like, and so he flies to a different state with a false identity to kill somebody to make it look like his daughter's innocent.
Yeah.
No, and then he comes back with a different disguise.
Yeah, the classy New York old man.
Yeah.
That's what I put.
Yeah, the grandpa that wouldn't hurt Flack kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when he has his little, like, fight with Marshall about him stopping, whatever, or something like that. So he flies to and from, you know, with different disguises, whatever. I think by this point, he's already thinking of quote-unquote, ending his killing spree, whatever. So he finally takes Mr. Smith, you know, to what's going to be the climatic murder. All right, so you know, the whole thing about them stalking the criminal, like when Mr. Brooks figures out what he's gonna do, he kind of makes a plan to make sure the cop gets to the criminal, right?
Yes.
And he ties this in with Mr. Smith in the sense that he gets all his furniture taken out of his apartment and he sends it, quote unquote, to the killer's place. And so that kind of leaves a lead for my wife here to go on a manhunt. So he sets that up for her, and you know, like for her to make sure, or for him to make sure that she's gonna get the guy. And this whole time he's planning of killing the guy that she's trying to divorce, because this guy's a douchebag. I'm sorry, like, you know, we Monica and I have had a trend of douchebags in movies. So how will you compare him to the other like three or four that we've talked about already?
Somehow I feel like they keep like leveling up. So this one, he's like a greedy cheater. I feel like he's almost at the same level as the guy from Midsommar,
mm-hmm.
but greedy.
Yeah, I would put him there too. He's like, yeah. he married her. I mean, he's younger than she is, for one.
Yes.
I think he married her out of convenience, and that plays into like the whole thing that Mr. Brooks is into her because she's got money, but she still wants to be a cop and, you know, a role model, I guess, that we mentioned earlier. Or he wants her to be a role model for his daughter. So he ties all the knots together. I mean, Mr. Brooks being the mastermind criminal that he is, he's thought of everything. He figures a way to connect everything and make himself get away clean. So he has the keys to Mr. Smith's apartment. He sends a moving crew to take his furniture out and, like I said, take it to the, or send it, quote unquote, to the criminal's place where he's holding up. So she's like in Mr. Smith's apartment when she finds the moving company's note.
Yeah.
And her partner comes in and, hey, what are you doing here? Like, and she's like, well, you know, I'm trying to, you know, find clues for the murder or whatever. And by this time, Mr. Smith and Mr. Brooks already killed the lawyer and the husband, who, by the way, they're screwing each other, you know?
Of course. From when they were, like, trying, and I'm doing that with air quotes because this guy was never trying to negotiate. He just wanted all of her money from the get-go. Uh-huh. And his lawyer, who just happens to be a very sexy lady, is like touching his hand the whole time. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, no, these people are definitely like messing around for sure. Like, there's no doubt.
He was very easy to hate. I mean, because he was like this pretty boy, like gold digger. Uh-huh. He was just a male gold digger, you know? And so they just made him the epitome of like what many people consider douchey, you know?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But at the end of the day, like, who doesn't like a bimbo once in a while, right? And so I think that's where Demi Moore fell for the charm of like, oh, uh-huh. I don't have to have a conversation with this person, you know, like they fit my schedule. And then somehow that falls into like, you know what, this is love because we've been doing this for this long now. And I need something to tell myself to get me through my work day, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think in a way they're kind of probably using each other. I mean, she does seem to have loved him at some point, quote unquote, but I think you're right. Like, I think she just liked the fact that a younger, I guess, good looking guy, whatever, liked her. And yeah, like you say, I mean, he was, I think he was a restaurant owner or something like that, or a
business. Restaurateur.
Oh yeah.
Title.
Yeah. So I mean, I think in a way, yeah, that he was using her for sure, but she was also kind of like, you know, using him in a way as far as like a boy toy type of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you know, she finds a note and her partner tells her, hey, you do know that your husband and his lawyer were murdered, right? And she's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? You know, like, what's going on? And so he tries to detain her for questioning, and she, like, you know, does the move that I want her to do on me. No, she pins him to the floor and, call me daddy type of thing. and then she just leaves. Like, she leaves and she goes on the manhunt for this address, and she still doesn't know that it's for the killer that tried to kill her or whatever. So she finds that out when she gets to the place, you know, it's like really like this like dilapidated, like abandoned looking type of apartment building, like really like, you know.
Dude, I wrote that it looks like something out of a freaking like a haunted house type of thing, because the doors are like weird, like they look like they had like either rust on them or something, like, and they were really wide for their apartments, you know, like, and this guy's a criminal, what is he doing in like like what could have looked like a luxury like apartment type of thing, but the apartment was big too.
Yeah,
like you start walking, you know, all these different like areas, and I'm like, dude, how big is this place? Because like it feels like everything's connected, and then like the windows are like grimy but like red and like really weird. So I was like, this looks like a haunted house,
and it's all dark and everything.
Yeah, like I know exactly like how to describe it. It was like a John Carpenter style film, like Escape from New York or something like that. Like that's what the that, like when that scene was going on, it was like an 80s movie. Like that's what it looked like. The characters like that they had, you know, like this blonde dude and this chick that had like this trashy, like a Euro trash, I guess. Thing to her, right? Like that's who the bad guys were, and it's like they look like Russian, like Rocky, you know, like
that.
Yeah, man, that's what it looked like to me, and it was weird, and it was one of those moments where I was like, where the hell does this come into like what's going on?
Like, what was the point of all that?
I think he's just throwing wrenches into the mix, like, let's just see how she handles this, you know? Mm. I don't think he meant it maliciously. I think he just, like, he's like, this will distract her. She's never going to catch on that it's me, you know?
Yeah,
I think it's a dual purpose. One, like you said, keep her occupied enough so that she stays off his back of Mr. Brooks, you know? So while she's handling that situation, she's not going to be thinking about him, at least for a while, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was one of his points. Two is he wants to see how she performs under pressure, kind of thing, and you know, see if she's a good enough of a detective as he thinks she is.
Yeah, that was risky though, because could have gotten shot and killed.
Well, she went alone.
Yeah,
she went alone into like pretty much like the, you know, quote unquote the lion's den here.
Yeah.
And then So she's trying to knock on the doors, whatever, and this guy just happens to be leaving the apartment with his girlfriend, you know, like Mark says, his Eurotrash girlfriend.
Yeah.
And he sees her, and she, and you know, they have a little shootout, and the lights go off, and you know, the light bulbs explode and everything. So
it's like a techno little party up in there with, yeah, the lights. Like,
yeah. So yeah, like you guys have mentioned, that one particular scene looks like it's from a different movie altogether. Like, yeah. But I think it kind of like plays into the whole like thing where you know it's kind of like, in the sense of what's that expression, where they tie loose ends, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the explosive conclusion to her problem with him, as you know, the criminal that broke out of jail specifically to kill her, you know.
I don't know if you noticed, but like, I thought when she got kidnapped, I thought the chick, because she was the one that was driving, the girlfriend,
yeah,
I thought her whole hair was blonde. And then in that one scene where they're having the gunfight, she has like just blonde up in the front and black in the back.
Well, maybe the tint was wearing off, my friend. Yeah.
The what?
The tint, the hair tint.
Yeah, that's a whole like.
Nah, man, no, dude, that doesn't wear off. They grow out of it.
Like, well, not that fast. That
was, I mean, oh my god, guys, yeah. I'm trying to make a joke here. Come on, don't kill me here. But I mean,
I'm sorry. I'm getting all, hey, man. I'm
all judgmental.
I polished off that bottle, so.
No, I think we're all in a very good mood right now. Don't worry.
Right now at my time is 11:14 p.m. You guys is like what, like 1 p.m. right now?
1:15 a.m. Yeah. A.m. in the morning, my friend.
A.m.
But we're good. I mean, I'm gonna work tomorrow, but whatever. I don't really work. lost my train of thought here. Well, for a minute.
The gunfight.
Yes, the gunfight. You know, well, the lady's hair specifically. Maybe she dyed it to kind of like, you know, disguise her appearance again. I mean, like I don't know. Maybe. So you know, long story short, to kind of just wrap that up real quick. I mean, they have a shootout, and my wife kills, you know, shoots him. And to avoid capture, he kills his girlfriend and himself, and that kind of ties down that whole situation between them. And it leaves Mr. Brooks room and time to do his own thing, which is, yeah, after they killed successfully, you know, the lawyer and the my wife's ex-husband, quote unquote, whatever. After they do that, Mr. Brooks, you know, he's in the car, and Marshall's like, hey, you know, this guy's gonna kill you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Brooks says, yeah, I know, whatever. And so he pulls a gun on Mr. Smith. And he's like, well, you're going to do it. Like, you know, you're going to get off in this exit, whatever. And he's like, nope. He just like speeds the car up, you know. And so he's like, what are you doing? And so that's when he reveals, like, I want to stop this. I want to be done with this. I want to just, you know, end this forever. And you're going to help me do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when they go to the graveyard, right? Like, he owns a graveyard.
Yeah. Like, okay, well, that's super flex, but okay.
Yeah. And he explains it all casual, right? Like, he's like...
Well, I mean, that's the perfect reason to have an incinerator. So, I mean, he's buying the tools that he needs to get away with things.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I mean, that's just a weird thing. You're definitely not going to lead with, hi, my name is Mark, and I own a graveyard. Yeah, you know, you might want to start with something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I own a box factory. And how did he reach by making boxes? That's weird, but I mean, whatever.
Everyone needs boxes, dude. What are you talking about?
Yeah, like, we all need boxes, you know. I guess he is right. You know, he invests in things that people are always going to need, and we always need boxes, you know?
See, everyone's just, like, the companies made their own boxes, I guess, but I guess they outsource. Like, that was really random, too. I'm like, wow, what an interesting,
like,
company to,
like,
have.
What if he sells to FedEx and UPS? Like,
maybe.
What if he makes all of their boxes?
Maybe.
We don't know.
So rich.
Yeah.
So they head to the graveyard, you know, and he tells Mr. Smith, oh, well, you're going to help me, you know, you're going to kill me and make sure that all this is over. He had already left a letter to his wife and child or daughter. And that's what I meant when I said earlier that, you know, he cares for them, because he like, leaves a letter for them. Well, I'm going to go away. I have some illness that can be cured, whatever, or something like that.
Terminal illness, yeah.
Yeah, so he kind of, like, tries to wrap that up, whatever. But at the very, very end, he has a change of heart, so to speak. You know, Mr. Smith tries to kill him, in fact. As he's telling the story, like, I mean, I want to die. I want to get this over with, whatever. He looks like he's really trying to get through with it. But as soon as Mr. Smith pulls the trigger... You see him and his face changes, like his little, like, expression, Mr. Brooks, you know?
He smirks. He's like, ha ha.
Yeah. I got you where I want you, kind of thing, you know? Yeah. So, and then he explains, I know he has a shovel and he, like, you know, hits a guy in the head or whatever. And he tells him, like, oh, you know, like, I just want to make sure that I'm here to see how my daughter's pregnancy plays out, whatever. I'm wondering whether he played Mr. Smith or he knew he was going to, like, not kill him. Because, well, he explains, Mr. Brooks says, well, I bent the pin in your firearm, so I knew you weren't going to kill me.
Yeah.
Whatever, but I had a backup gun in case I had a change of heart, whatever. But do you guys think he was playing him? Like, did he really mean for him to kill him? Or was he just like, like, I'm just going to play along with this guy and see what happens?
I mean, I feel like he did, a part of him does want to die. Because he's, like, I guess tired of keeping up the charade, you know? But he loves what he's doing, you know? So he's an addict. Like, of course he doesn't want to stop. I think that's why he had all these backup plans. He had, like, freaking backup plan for every single scenario that could have happened.
Well, he gave himself enough time to decide. He gave himself enough of a real situation to figure out whether he wanted to die or not. He's like, all right, I'm going to put myself in a position where this guy will think he has the power over me. And in doing so, we'll see if he can pull the trigger. And if he can, and I feel it, I'm going to let him kill me. But in that moment, he's like, I have a grandkid coming.
Yeah.
I just wrapped up a murder for my daughter to keep her out of harm's way in terms of the law.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, he needed to figure it out in a way that he couldn't manipulate himself. I mean, he, like you said, he does think ahead, and so he bent the firing pin, but he's like, well, we'll see if this guy wants to kill me. Odds are he does. And when it happened and he was there and he was in that moment, that's when he knew 100%, okay, no, that's not what's going to happen. I'm going to take care of this guy, and then I get to wash my hands of the thumbprint killer.
Yeah. Because he blames him, you know?
You know what? Yeah. What I wondered after that, though, is like, what happened to the suicide note, or to that note that he said about the terminal illness? Like, because he left it on the desk.
He left it in his office.
Yeah.
I mean, he could always go back and get it. I mean, he owns a company.
Yeah.
In the office, but, like, I thought it was at his home, though.
I thought it was at his workplace, like, his business office. I mean, either way, I mean, I think he's going to find a way to get it. I mean, he's not going to, like...
But yeah. I was like, imagine, like, somebody goes in there and sees the letter and is like, oh, what? Yeah. And then he comes like, I'm kidding. No, it was a false alarm. Like, my bad.
That's why I think that was in his office, you know, not in his home.
Well, the thing that would have prompted somebody to find it would be after they file a missing persons report, you know? So it's not like he just left it somewhere where his daughter or his wife would see it right away.
That's what I thought.
And then he comes home and then they're like, you have a terminal illness, you know?
Yeah.
April Fool's, guys.
Brooks, part two.
It's the middle of July, bro, with that.
Like, yeah, he's got some explaining to do. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I would imagine that he would have thought of a way, like Mark says, you know, that they wouldn't have found it until he's been gone for a while, you know?
Yeah.
So... I wanted to ask you guys, since we discussed, you know, like, we kind of have haphazardly jumped through this movie, but it's kind of like Pulp Fiction, you know, it all comes together in the end, you know? In the end, he has managed to, one, make sure his daughter doesn't go to jail.
Uh-huh.
He's managed to also get my wife off his back. You know, she's not going to bother him anymore because she already thinks that Mr. Smith is a killer.
Yeah.
And then, three, you know... she's going to be, like, not worried about the killer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So he can keep watching her as far as, you know, like we discussed, being her, like, a role model or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's got rid of Mr. Smith. You know, he has all the evidence, whatever, of him killing, you know, that couple in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So he's tied up all loose ends. You know, he's come out on top, basically. Mm-hmm. They're at the very end. And they do have that one scene at the very end where he's in the top of the building and he calls my wife, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, so why are you a cop? You know, and she's like, who is this? And it's like, oh, you know, I just want to know, like, I didn't have to give you the address for the criminal or whatever, but, you know.
Yeah. Mr. Baffert? And I'm like, Really? Like, you've met Mr. Baffert. You know his voice doesn't sound like that. But then I guess she realizes later that it's not him.
Yeah, and Mr. Baffert is the actual name of Mr. Smith's character. Yeah.
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 So he's like, no, like, you know, whatever. No, I just want to know why you were a cop. And she was like, well, to prove my dad wrong because he wanted a boy. And you know, I wanted to make sure that, or prove to him that I was just as capable as a man, whatever, something like that.
Which was so unexpected. Like, I didn't expect that to be the backstory.
Me either, to be honest, me either. But I mean, I guess that's kind of a good motive, I guess, you know, kind of gives her the motivation to succeed. So then she's like, well, so where are you? And I'm in the very top building. He just like drops his cell phone. And
yeah.
And then we got to talk for sure about that dream sequence, you know, at the very, like, you know, before...
He goes over to his daughter's room to kind of check up on her, right, and, like, give her a kiss goodnight. And when he gets close to her, this chick just busts out some, like, big scissors and just stabs him in the neck. And the whole time he's, like, struggling to breathe or whatever, and the blood's coming out, and there's blood everywhere because this guy gets up and, like, starts smearing the whole walls with his blood. You know, she's kind of, like, moving away from him because she's like, don't touch me, you know, like, because yeah. I guess she doesn't want to get the evidence on her. And then later, you know, we find out that he it was a dream, you know, which I was very disappointed. I was like, dude, that would have been a really cool ending. Like,
yeah.
What? Like, his own daughter murdered him, his, like, biggest fear. But he does go. At some point, this guy comes home. He drinks, like, half a glass of milk. Does not brush his teeth. And like, they're talking to his wife like really close, like, this freaking gross, like, who does that? Who drinks milk before bed and doesn't wash their mouth? Like, that's nasty.
A serial killer.
Yeah. He's so, like, he has to be a psychopath, obviously, to do that, because that's just, brush your teeth, people. Like, don't go to bed with milk in your mouth.
I like how the detail caught your attention, and that really bothers you. I like how, you know, his murder seems to be okay. but
you're like, I can wrap my head around that.
His murdering tendencies don't bother you at all, but his milk drinking before bed without brushing his teeth, you know, that's where the line is drawn for you, Monica.
Yeah.
so you know, he has a dream where he gets killed by his daughter, and he wakes up, and I agree with you. I mean, I think that would have made for a better ending. I wouldn't have liked it. I'm kind of torn up in the fact that, like, you know, like, I'm never going to know what happens later on in this character's life. I mean, I wouldn't ask for a sequel. God forbid, no. But it's one of those movies, the rare movies where I'm left wondering, like, man, what would happen later? Like, how would this guy continue? Like, would he continue to kill? Would he, like, reform? Would he, like, try to help his daughter? Like, I mean...
Like, is she going to go full, like, psycho and, like, murder a bunch of people, or is he gonna teach her how to do it the right way? Because he already knows. So he,
uh-huh.
I'm like, you're gonna have a talk with her and be like, hey, you know, like, I know what you did. I want to teach you how to do it the right way, like Dexter style, you know, like where his, if you guys haven't seen the show, he's a serial killer and his adoptive dad teaches him how to be a good killer so he doesn't get caught. So that's what I thought would have been, like, cool. But
well, nah, like, the difference being, I guess, that Dexter's stepdad or adopted father was, he adopted him from a murder.
That's...
He's built a vigilante. So it's like, there's a lot of questioning parental, like, parental skills there and stuff. But
sure.
But it made for a good TV show, yeah. And it's funny, we didn't bring up the Dexter thing earlier, but... You know, with the whole, like, hiding your stuff. But Mr. Brooks, I feel like he had his shit together more and longer. Because when he killed Mr. Smith, he was like, before I was a thumbprint killer, I killed many people in many different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That next step was like, that was amazing. Chef's kiss.
Yeah, that line really caught my attention as well. I mean, as far as him... So, I mean, how many identities has he had or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, Monica. So, and Mark also. Let's not forget about Mark. We've come to what I've revealed already is one of my favorite segments in the whole podcast, which is basically where we discuss the villain more, a little bit more in depth. And in this case, you know, we have Mr. Brooks and Marshall. I think I want to put them together for this. So the classification for Mr. Brooks and Marshall would be dual natured in the sense that Mr. Brooks is a person, you know, he's not a zombie, he's not a, you know, a ghost, whatever. He's a human, but he has to go through this process of transformation in order to, like, kind of, you know, unleash his dark impulses. And usually it's at the instigation of Marshall. Marshall's the one that's like, hey, man, come on, let's go kill these people, you know, like, come on, let's do it. And in the beginning, he mentions that he's been clean for a year or 2 years. You can see that Marshall is kind of like the one that's pulling the strings behind the curtain here. He's definitely conflicted about his actions. I mean, he mentions, you know, throughout the movie, he wants to quit, he wants to stop. He feels guilty for sure. And Marshall, like, his thrill is basically getting Mr. Brooks to kill people so he can feel alive, you know, I think.
Yeah, because he lives through Mr. Brooks.
Yeah, he lives through him, and so when Mr. Brooks mentions that, hey, you know, I think we should just end this, whatever, and Marshall's like, nah, I like being alive, bitch. Like, you know, you're not gonna take me with you. Marshall isn't really discussed as far as what his origin is. The only thing that Mr. Brooks mentioned is that, yeah, you know, he's had a long history of murders. You know, like, he mentioned that before being the Thumper Killer, he's had a lot of murders or committed a lot of murders. Mm-hmm. Basically, their motivation would be killing people and getting away with it. You know, like,
the pleasure, really. That's,
yeah, I mean, self gratification.
Yeah.
Because you see it in the beginning, like you know, when Mr. Brooks kills that first couple, you know, like, he, like, does a little dance and twirl and, like,
super high.
Yeah, he kind of looks like a little ballerina there for a minute. So, yeah, I mean, basically killing people, getting away with it, you know, getting off on the feeling of power or whatever it is, you know. By the time, you know, he's there, it's too late for you.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's already told you, hey, what's up? And you're like, ah! So by that point, it's definitely too late. I mean, you're basically done for. You know, you're dead. Like Mark said, I mean, he's walking into your home with a Ziploc bag around his arm, whatever. Like, you know, you're not gonna make it out of there. Like, nobody would go through that much effort and detail for nothing. You know, like, they're not gonna, like, tell you jokes or anything. His abilities, I mean, he doesn't have any powers, like I mentioned. He's not a superhuman, but he is rich. You know, so he's kind of like an evil Batman.
Yeah.
You know, you want to think about it that way? I mean, he's kind of like an evil Batman. We mentioned his wife, how oblivious and naive she is, or forgiving, or whatever it is you want to call it. Uh-huh. That's a power, because I don't think anybody has a wife like that.
It's true love right there.
I mean, I'm going to ask you a question, Monica. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but if your boyfriend, you know, or the person you're with is sneaking out at nights on a regular basis, I'm going to my study or my office, you would not be, you're going to tell me you're not going to suspect anything is going on?
Yeah, I would automatically think he's cheating on me. Like, why would he, like, I mean, maybe not in the beginning, I'd be like, okay, well, maybe he's just really working on something. But if, like, let's say I go to his study and he's not there, like, hey, where are you going in the middle of the night? Come on. Like, of course I'm suspicious.
Yeah, so, I mean, she knows something is up, but whatever. Like, we already talked about that. And his resources, you know, of course, his money, but also, like, we talked about all these extra IDs and passports and, you know, whatever. The cars, the clothes, the furnace. So he has all these things planned out. He's obviously a very intelligent individual. He's not, like, his own daughter or Mr. Smith, you know. He actually thinks things through. He's not just emotional. He plans everything out to the T.
Yeah, he's not impulsive.
Yeah. And his weaknesses, you know, as far as you know, as a character, I'd say his daughter.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, his daughter is his number one weakness, because as soon as she comes into the scene, you see how he's, like, you know, done for, you know. He, like,
she's a kryptonite.
Yeah, so his main weakness would be his daughter. And you see it when the cops come and he goes out of his way to fly to a different state to kill someone for her. I mean, like, And as far as Marshall goes, I you know, basically he's tied up to Mr. Brooks. Whatever happens to him happens to Marshall.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you die, that affects me as well. So, like, you're not going to die. I'm not going to let you die, whatever. So, what do you guys think of both of them as a team of villains, like, or as a duo? Like, how effective are they?
I think they're very effective because Marshall is his memory bank. That's the guy who really is taking in all the details. And then he helps out Mr. Brooks with everything because, like, obviously they're the same person. But Marshall's like the one with the intuition. He always knows like something's up, something's missing, something like when the whole thing happened with his daughter, that, you know, she was saying one story and he's like, that's not like everything. She's hiding something from you. And like, he's the one feeding that information to him. So that's, he's like his subconscious also. So they're a really good team, I think.
I think that he's the addiction, and it goes down to the whole where there's a will, there's a way. When you want to get your fix, right, you'll feed all the information that you would need to an addict to be like, you can get away with it. So it's like he figured out what he would need to do to get all the evidence that Mr. Smith has without even starting the conversation. You know, just having this and a little bit of information that he had, which Mr. Smith volunteered very, very quickly, which just goes to show, you know, what a dummy that guy was.
Yeah,
I think that, like, you know, he was like, hey, look, he's like, where would he hide it? You know, so they ask questions. So it's his paranoia. Mm-hmm. It's, will I get caught? How easy can I get away with this? How much effort am I going to have to put into this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think whenever he finds one where it's like, this will work and this will satisfy my need, he does it. But he also killed to keep his secret, you know, which this guy did not think about at all, which, again, it goes back to that whole thing of him wanting power and him not knowing how to seek it. And this is the only way he thought he could even try to figure it out. And,
mm-hmm.
This is, you know, the whole thing was him trying to act like he outsmarted this guy. You know, he keeps trying to outsmart Mr. Brooks. Because in the car, he surprises him with a gun, you know. He tries to blackmail him, like, so he thinks he's smarter than he is already. And so he thinks, I'll learn how to do what this guy's doing and then I'll just take over. Kind of like the daughter wants to take over the family business, and this guy wants to be the thumbprint killer, you know?
Yeah, actually. Because in that scene, when they're in the car riding away from the murder, like, Marshall actually tells him, hey, it's because, or, you know, there's, this smells like gun oil, that's not from your gun.
Yeah.
So Marshall's already aware, and he makes Mr. Brooks aware, you know? So, yeah, I mean, they're very symbiotic. It's kind of like Venom and you know, that Venom character in the comics where, like...
Yeah, dude. And Eddie Brock, man.
Yeah, Eddie Brock. Yeah, that's right. I forgot his name for a minute. So Eddie and Venom, you know, it's like they kind of feed off each other and they help each other get or meet their goals, you know. And they make it work in a way. So that's the first thing that came to my mind when I first saw this movie. Like, oh man, this is kind of like Venom, you know. Like we're it's a normal person, quote unquote, that has this thing that makes him do things that he doesn't want to do, or maybe he does. You know, you're like, you're not really sure. But in any case, you know, they help each other kind of meet their goals there. I think, yeah, you know, I agree with what both you guys have said. They do have, you know, a very close friendship. Like I've mentioned, you know, they're like BFFs, you know, like they kind of live for each other, basically.
Yeah.
So I think they're very effective as a team. I mean, like they whatever one of them misses, the other one makes aware of, you know, like, so they kind of cover each other in a way. And I would say on the scare meter, Monica, Mark changed the category because usually we give skulls, right?
Yeah.
Usually we give skulls, but Mark wants to give a different... I mean, not skulls. What are you giving these people, Mark? On a scale from 0 to 10, how many of your units are you giving in this?
Yeah, I was measuring it in chewies. right? You know, I don't know, man. In terms of scariness, I would say it's low on the scare meter. Mm-hmm. It would be like less than a 5. I would say 4.5 chewies.
Okay. Out of 10.
Yeah.
Okay, Monica, what do you, how many chewies have you give these guys?
I'm going to do 3 chewies.
3.
Yeah.
You guys both disappoint me. I don't want to talk to you again.
Are you truly scared?
It's because it's real scariness, which has been normalized at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the only three. Yeah, yeah. Because if I was to rate this movie in terms of quality, it would be like a
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, but I was thinking it from the sense that you guys were thinking about it. I mean, it's a real fear, so I was going to give it kind of like a high rating. I was going to give it a 7 chewies out of 10.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, that's fair.
No, you said 3, so no.
Because we were talking about, like, scare. Like, I'm comparing this to, like, you know, your typical scary movie. But yeah, if we're talking psychological terror, psychological horror, I agree with you. Yeah, 7's a pretty good rating. Like, because, like you said, this could actually happen in real life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that we know could be a Mr. Brooks.
Are we all giving this a 7?
Yeah,
I'm down.
I mean, once we factor in all the...
In terms of real fear, yes. If we're going on real fear, then yes.
Yeah, I'd say that's kind of a fair rating, honestly. Like, I mean, I'm not just saying that because it's one of my favorite movies ever. I'm just saying that because, you know, like... We've talked about how this can really happen, you know, somebody that you walk, you know, or run into in the mall, you know, in the shopping line, whatever, it can be the serial killer, you know, with 10 bodies in your closet, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, that just shows, or goes to show how you never really know the true nature of people, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, cool. I mean, I guess we can... agree to disagree. we're all giving this a 7 chewies out of 10.
Yes.
Awesome. Alright, so once again, we've outdone ourselves in length for this episode. but I for one, I'm really satisfied with the way this one turned out. First of all, I mean, since we're bringing this to a close tonight already, I want to thank everyone that's been listening in and everyone that has listened to this episode tonight. I want to give some shout-outs to the people that have been giving us feedback. We've had some new Instagram subscribers, people that are liking our posts. Their names are a little weird, so I'm not gonna say them, but but yeah, because everyone picks a weird like handle, you know, so they're all there. We got a couple of likes on our Facebook page. We got Aranda liking our page. We also got Rowley. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, dude. Sorry. he liked our page as well. And so yeah, I mean, thank you guys for all your positive feedback, your likes. You know, it motivates us to want to keep doing this and improving ourselves. And by all means, if you have any feedback, you know, messages, comments, suggestions, as maybe a movie you want us to do, I mean, that's also welcome as well. Monica, do you have any people you want to give a shout out to?
Not specifically, but yeah, I mean, we like Chewy said, we'd really appreciate if you guys could send us like some, you know, constructive feedback, just so we can know what you guys are looking for, and we know what to put in for our next episodes. So yeah.
And for sure, the biggest shout out of all them all tonight goes to my friend Mark here, because he joined us for the whole episode. Originally, I was just gonna have him for like 20 minutes, but I mean, no. Full disclosure, we had some technical difficulties that, you know, before we even started recording. And so I was like, nah, screw it, let's just keep him on for the whole episode, because I don't know if we can, you know, salvage this or you know, make sure that it works. So, I mean, it's always fun to talk to this guy, man, because he's up there in intellect. You know, he may seem like your typical rock star. You know, what people perceive as, you know, I don't look anything like a rock person. I mean, if people see me, they think I'm like Mark said, like a doctor or whatever. Because I don't have long hair, I don't have any tattoos or piercings or anything. So when people find out that I like heavy metal, they get like, what? Like, pardon, excuse me. So, yeah, no, I mean, it's been great having you on, man. I mean, maybe sometime in the future, we like, maybe agree to do another one with us. What do you think?
Yeah, dude. No, man, I'd be happy to be back. You know, I mean, I had fun. You know, I always have fun talking to you, and you know, I mean, we always delve into deeper conversation, you know, than I think the average interaction with other people, you know, and so I think it's always fun whenever we get together and we talk. And Monica, you know, it's fun to hear your this is our first interaction, you know, so it's
Yes.
always it's you know, it was interesting to hear your opinion on things. And of course, any friend of Chewie's is a friend of mine, you know. So
Thank you.
I'd
Thank
love to be
you.
back, man. I had a really good time.
Awesome, man. I'm really happy to hear that. Make sure you tell your friends about us.
I will. I will.
Spread the love, you know, tell all your friends that you're on here so they you know the listener base grows. And you know, once Mark, you know, does my advertising for me, you know. Once he tells everybody to
I'll
listen
do.
to us, you know, you can be in here too, maybe. I mean, maybe not as extensively as he has, but you know, you can participate in other ways if you choose not to be a whole episode guest kind of thing. You can be here for a segment. You can send us a message and we can read it on, you know, on the air for you. I mean, if you want to share a story or you know, whatever, we can.
And a question.
Yeah, questions, definitely, for sure. I mean, if you have any questions and like we mentioned film suggestions or anything you want us to talk about, I mean, we can always bring that up and say, hey, you know, so and so wants us to do this, and you know, a lot, and we can talk about you for a minute, you know. So that's your 15 seconds of fame right there, courtesy of us. I mean, yeah, for sure, man. I definitely would like to have you back at some point, and because we are planning some special episodes, and I don't want to give too many spoilers, but you know, so hopefully we can have you back in the near future, man. That'd be a thrill for us.
I'd love to be back.
And reminder for the audience to go on our social media pages and once again just give your messages, you know, feedback, whatever it is you have in mind. We are planning on bringing more guests soon. Hopefully everything works out the way it worked tonight with Mark. You know, putting aside those technical difficulties that we had. But besides that, I mean, hopefully, you know, we can all agree on a schedule and things work out so we can have them on our episode. And Monica, we always give a hint about the next episode. So, do you have anything for us, or do you want me to do it?
You do it this time.
You want me to do it this time?
Yeah.
I did it last time, but okay, I'll do it again for you.
Oh,
Let me think, because I know what we're doing, but I want to think of a funny thing to say or something. Basically, it's the origin story, right? It's the origins
yeah.
of a very famous ghost that torments people in a home.
Yes.
Let's just put it that way. So, without much further ado, I want to thank everyone that's listened to this extensive podcast, this episode. Man, every time like we go a little longer, but I mean, it's all good. I mean, I think the content tonight was interesting enough. So I want to thank everyone that's been listening in. Monica's and Mark's friends, please share us.
What, sorry?
Yeah, Monica and Mark's friends out there, you know, make sure you share
Oh,
us. And
yeah.
again, you know, you can always be a part of this. So that's gonna be it for me. I'm gonna be signing out. I want to wish you guys a very good night, morning, evening, hangover, whatever it is you're going through. Hopefully you're enjoying that. And that's gonna be all for tonight. So hopefully we'll see you on the next one.
Bye.
Mark said bye.
Bye.
Bye.